This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hide and Seek is a program for adults. Joy 94.9 reminds you that the next hour may contain strong sexual references, coarse language, and drug references.
And seek.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy. 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 And enjoy the ride.
Now, my first guest tonight on Hide and Seek is Robbie Swan. He's the founding father, media director, and political advisor for the Eros Association, which represents the interests of Australia's adult retail and entertainment sectors. Robbie's well known for his public snouches with arch-conservative Senator Brian Harradine, who at one stage accused him of being a transvestite in a Senate committee hearing. He was editor and founder of the political humour and satire magazine Matilda, and editor of the eco magazine Simply Living. He's also worked with Philip Adams and Richard Neville, helping their anti-censorship campaigns. In 2001, Robbie opened the National Museum of Erotic Art in Canberra, and he remains an avid art collector of all things sexual in art. Robbie Swan, welcome to Hide and Seek, and welcome to Joy 94.9.
Doing good, mate. How are you going?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining us.
Good. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Robbie, is the museum still open?
Well, it's not open to the public anymore, unfortunately, but it's still open in the sense that we still maintain and add to the collection, within a private sort of venue these days.
So one of these days, let's hope that we'll be able to see it up and running again in full flight.
Well, yeah, that may happen. I think that probably what will happen is that it probably needs to join with one or two other major collections of erotica in the country to form one united sort of erotic art museum or gallery.
Or a component of the National Gallery or something.
Well, I think that's probably a reasonable thought. I mean, I don't know whether it's the National Gallery or actually the National Museum of Australia.
Sure.
I think either probably would be there. But I think that there is a natural disinclination amongst major curators, and policymakers who run, government-funded art and museums to look at erotica seriously. Oh, well, not seriously, but they fear it. I mean, every weekend in Australia now, you'll find an ordinary suburban art gallery or a major gallery will have an exhibition on, and there'll be one or two paintings or sculptures or whatever that'll be screened off from the rest of it because it might offend someone who, comes in and complains. And, art galleries around Australia at the moment are in crisis because of this. It's just pathetic that it's come to this.
It really has come into the forefront of our consciousness of late, particularly with certain photographic exhibitions. Why do you think that is? Why is sexual expression in art so controversial?
Well, I don't think it is actually all the time. I think it's only in this particular time that we're living in now. And I think that one of the things here is that the Christian campaigners in Australia have not been able to make a really huge dent in the issue of so-called pornography. You know, that they, despite 10 or 20 years of, assault after assault in the parliament and in other kind of forums, they actually haven't still been able to get rid of, X-rated films and restricted magazines. They're still in adult shops and news agents and stuff, and they're not successful. So what they've done is a sort of displacement thing, is they've turned their attention on art galleries. And, that's what's happened here. They've just you know, they haven't been able to make any inroads in other areas, and so I think they've thought, right, well, we'll stop ordinary folk from accessing an increasing amount of erotica in galleries and stuff, and this is what we're seeing.
How is it that a painting, say, of two people fucking that was done 200 years ago can be considered art, and yet a photograph taken 6 months ago of the same thing is considered porn?
Well, that's just, I think that's to do with this, the campaign that these morals groups have run, that somehow, and it's not only morals groups too, I mean, government agencies and public servants run this line, that photographs are necessarily more explicit than paintings. And, you know, the reason that they argue this is because a photograph is actually a photo of something that happened, whereas the painting is something that might not have happened. I mean, it's a terribly Luddite argument because it just doesn't take into consideration at all the power of art to move people at different levels. It just simply says, you know, this was real, so therefore it's more powerful, it's more, you know, impactful. And you see that worded throughout the classification acts in the various states and at the federal one, arguing this nonsense.
Nor does it take into account photorealism as a painting medium or genre. It can be almost hyperreal.
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely right. And I mean, for someone who's sort of, I suppose, a bit world-weary with looking at, explicit photos over the years, you know, it takes something pretty special to kind of really grab my genitals these days, you know. But when you see something that is incredibly artistic in that genre and it moves you, I mean, it just grabs you straight away.
And sometimes it's not the explicitness of it. It's in fact what they're not showing.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. But, I mean, that is an artistic argument. That's someone who has an appreciation of art, which unfortunately a lot of public servants that administer the Classification Act in this country and most of the morals campaigners, they wouldn't know fucking art if they fell over it. You know?
All right then, here's one for you. What's the difference between erotica and porn?
I don't think there is any. I mean, it's simply a demarcation line that exists in everybody's head, which is always different for different people. I mean, you know, the line that you draw between that is different to mine, which will be different to every listener out there on the radio station tonight, because we're all different people and we all have different subjective experiences about sex and erotica as we're growing up. We all have different environments that we view it in. And so therefore, you know, I mean, look, Fred Nile thinks that any kind of sex education is a form of pornography. You know, it's just an impossibility, really, to define that. And I think that people who try and use those terms and say, oh, that's pornographic and that's erotic, and therefore that's good and that's bad, I mean, what are they saying? They're saying absolutely nothing. It's meaningless.
It sure is. Robbie, you've been collecting erotic art for many years now. What's your take on digital art? I read recently in an old issue of the Eros magazine, someone had written into you asking what your take was on digital art. She herself was a 55-year-old female school teacher who was a little bit not sold on the idea that it was art, the digital photography manipulation was art. And tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I mean, you know, look, I suppose you could sort of say, well, you know, you take a nice photo, for example, that you may have taken yourself or someone else has taken and given to you, whatever, you know, that has some artistic merit to it, and you stick it in Photoshop and you put, you know, one of those filters over it, like a pencil filter or a charcoal filter or something, you know, so, and you come up with a different image. Now, I mean, really, you've done nothing creatively to it except push the button. To make it there. But, you know, there still may be some artistic value in that. That's really hard to say. I mean, I think there's probably not a lot in that. But, I mean, not all digital art is like that. I mean, a lot of digital art is incredibly clever and is incredibly powerful. And I think that, you know, really as a genre, digital art is just as, real and as, as truthful and marketable as any other form of art. I mean, when you look at back at some of the digital masterpieces of Australian art, I mean, I have one hanging on the wall here, which was done by a bloke called Dr. Irresponsible back in about 1998, I think, or 1999, which was a very early piece of art. It was one of those sort of viral, you know, images that went around of Pauline Hanson sitting in the middle of between John Howard and Kim Beazley, and Kim Beazley and John Howard have got these beautiful Sunday afternoon leisure suits on, and they've got a beer in each hand, but she's got their cock out, and she's giving them both a hand job with a big smile on her face, and the name of it was called Distributing Preferences. And it was one of the funniest but very strong piece. It really said a lot about, you know, the state of the Parliament and the Senate at the time. And, you know, I thought it was a really incredible piece, and we stored it, as we do with quite a few of those digital images, because, you know, a lot of those digital images on the internet are very ephemeral. I mean, they're here one day and gone the next. And maybe there's something in that too, that's part of their artistic merit, is that they don't stay around long, like a sandcastle or one of those Aboriginal, you know, dirt paintings or something, which just go the next day. But I think it's important to archive some of that stuff and let people see what was happening.
Sure. I couldn't agree more. In 2007, Robbie, you wrote an article regarding the Victorian artist David Leite's exhibition titled Dancing with the Devil, and how a large canvas that he had done featuring a woman having cunnilingus performed on her by an octopus was too much for the locals, and that they called the police to have it removed from the window of the gallery. You went on to say in that article that the gallery exhibition had sold out, every painting going for $20,000+. Now, my point here is that at $20,000, this depraved, disgusting, eight-legged, twat-munching filth seems highly collectible.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's put in a plug for David Leite here too. I mean, he's a Benalla-based artist who really is, I would say, you know, one of the top three erotic artists in the country at the moment. I mean, his works are done on Hessian with an absolutely amazing technique and a very retro kind of feel to... mainly girls. I think it's all, you know, girls in the 50s and the 40s, that sort of era. Look, yeah, that painting that he did was actually a satire or a remake on the famous Hokusai painting, The Fisherman's Wife, which has really been done over and over again and interpreted by different artists over the years. So there was nothing provocative or, you know, whatever in him treating that painting again. But, I mean, it was at the, I think, Metro 5 Gallery in Armidale down there, and, you know, that's right. I mean, the fact that the painting ended up selling for around about $20,000 said a lot about the artistic value of it. But, I mean, I think the gallery even got a bomb threat from some of these Christian people. And, you know, because they could see it through the road. If they stood on tippy toes over at the bus stop over the road or something and looked in, they could see this thing in the window. And, I mean, really, you know, you have to wonder about where those people get off, and yeah, and also that, you know, about gallery owners. I'm not saying that the Metro 5 gallery people did anything. They did the right thing here and told them to rack off. But, I mean, many art gallery owners actually, you know, are subservient to these militant, you know, pushes by these religious groups to get rid of erotic art in the galleries or to somehow screen them off. And, you know, art gallery owners have got to stand up and be counted here. You know, they are now, unlike the pornographers, you know, who have been the holders of the line on free speech in sex and sexuality for many years now, now that the blowtorch is being turned on art gallery owners, you know, they just can't crumble and go to war on this, which many of them are doing. But I guess, in a way, they're not used to this heat, you know. I mean, I think we saw that with the, you know, the Henson photographs. I mean, you know, that was a travesty what happened there, no doubt. But, you know, poor old, you know, Bill Henson.
He really copped it, didn't he?
He copped it hugely, but he didn't say anything either. I mean, I just thought he should have come out guns blazing.
Yeah, I guess he was caught between a rock and a hard place. There was some really heavy pressure levelled at him from all sectors.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, I mean, I think that also that the art world and NAVA, the Art Industries Association, just weren't in that habit of defending themselves over this stuff, because it was all of a sudden it was out of the blue. This has never really happened before. Well, it did back in Norman Lindsay's day, but up until then it sort of rarely happened, especially with someone of the stature of Bill Henson. So, I mean, I think that the art world needs to regroup very quickly at the moment. And
get some balls, fellas.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they start educating themselves and coming up with the arguments to tell bureaucrats and, you know, even police officers, whoever else comes in there, to fuck off in no uncertain terms.
Well said. And I think, Robbie, on that note, I want to thank you for joining us on Hide and Seek this evening. Will you join us again one day soon?
I'd love to, Dean. Thank you very much for having me on.
That'd be great. Eros Association's Robbie Swan joining us on a Hide and Seek. This is Joy 94.9.
And enjoy the ride.
My next guests here on Hide and Seek have established themselves as two of Australia's most successful photographers, both commercially and artistically. For more than 6 years, they have worked together on numerous exhibitions and contributed to leading publications, both locally and internationally, winning multiple awards for their work along the way. They are the dynamic duo of Homoerotica, the boys behind Bad Behaviour Publishing, Melbourne's very own Calendar Crusaders, Travis DeJong and Ross Brownston.
Hey, Dean.
Hey.
Hello. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you
for joining us on Hide and Seek.
Thanks for inviting us. Yeah.
A pleasure. Travis, you are a graphic designer, journalist, public relations and communications consultant, artist, photographer, stylist, mentor, and the editor of samesame.com.au here in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Where do you have time for a relationship or artistic endeavours?
That's a very good question. I often ask myself the same question. It's a bit of a balancing act, but I have trouble saying no in many areas of my life. I just really enjoy what I do, and opportunities have come my way. So
what are some of the areas you can't say no to?
Look, it's no shock to most people that I'm definitely a very open sexual person. I love experience. So when things come my way, I love expressing myself. It's like, even if I lived in a cardboard box, I have to express myself.
You have to fuck it.
I have to, yeah, exactly. I have to experience it, feel it, touch it, know it.
Well, why not?
Yeah.
Ross, finding some information on you was a little more difficult, I've got to say. But then again, Travis is, for a little fella, pretty loud and often heard. So you were originally from Brisbane.
Correct.
Where you grew up.
Yeah.
How long have you been in Melbourne now?
I moved here in 98, so for say 11 years, 10, 11
okay.
years, yes.
Well, it's nearly home.
It's very much home now, I would say, yes, definitely.
Your photographic work has been published in various magazines, including Blue Magazine, Outrage, DNA. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think you got a cover this year in a DNA, didn't you?
Correct, yes, yeah, beginning of the year, yeah.
Very good. Yep. You've had heaps of work in Melbourne Star, Bee News, MCV, Southern Star. Where do you, outside of the gay realm, where do you work? What photographically do you do?
Mainly commercially, like modeling agencies,
okay.
Private jobs, like small businesses, that sort of thing, basically, yeah. So I freelance a lot of the time.
And now you two got together many years ago to do pieces of work, but your first sort of major thing that we knew you had together produced was the Bad Behaviour Calendar in 2008, which was an international success. There's no doubt about it. Tell us a little bit about that process, producing it and getting it up and running.
I think Ross and I, we've always talked about doing a calendar thing. And, like, at that point, we'd worked together for about 4 years. Just like, you know, he'd do the lighting or I'd do the photography. We always, we work really well together. Yeah, we were just sitting down in the lounge room one day and we thought, it's never going to get easier. We need to just do it. And it's a scary thought, too, because you need money to kind of make things like that happen, but we somehow sort of just thought, no, let's do it, you know. Let's shoot the kind of images we've always wanted to shoot.
Now, I've heard you two referred to as like an old married couple insofar as the way you work together. What's he like to work with, Ross?
I think we've established a very good rapport now, like a working relationship. There might have been a few little things to tease out in the beginning.
But tantrums on the set?
Or? Oh, totally. No.
we're quite good, actually. Yeah, but
these days we're really good. But when we first started out, like, we're quite different artists, the way we work and even the kind of the models we like, our style and everything. So trying to get, you know, two artists, two egos, all that sort of stuff, and to get that trust
happening. That's what I was going to say. There was almost...
Yeah, shut up, Travis.
There were two egos happening to a point. We both had our histories and our backgrounds, and we wanted to maintain our own identity still. So it was sort of a compromise in working together and finding that medium, which I think we've well and truly found now.
I've got to say, you do very well at sharing the accolades, though, and I think that is important too moving forward. I mean, you've gone on to produce a all-female-based calendar mm-hmm. for the lesbian market.
Mm-hmm.
How did that go?
That was received quite well. It was quite a challenge for us to put it out there because it was something we really wanted to do, but we were taking a risk at the same time, really trying to not pander to a particular market, but keep it something that we thought would be received well. You know?
And authentic as well. Like, because we both have a lot of girlfriends who sort of were talking about, oh, there's no lesbian images out there. But we sort of thought...
Yeah, but can two gay guys do that?
And that's exactly it. That's why we hesitated for so long.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think at the end of it, I think we kept it safe. We didn't take too many risks with it. We decided that it's... I think we want to see two girls go out and do it. You know, I challenge two girls to go out and make a calendar for girls, so...
Travis, you and your earlier works, perhaps far more hardcore than what we've seen in the Bad Behaviour calendars. Mm-hmm. Is that because Ross has tamed you, or is that...
that's a really good question. I guess, certainly when I was in art school, and even before that, I was just absolutely obsessed with cock, sex, fucking everything. The images were so fresh to me as well because I was just discovering them myself. But no, even Ross's work, early work, has a lot of... It's quite explicit as well. And it's interesting that we both, with the calendar, for example, that we've both gone in that sort of... We've sort of toned it down a lot more. It's actually really softcore. It's nothing too explicit at all.
No, they're highly stylized and beautiful images.
Yeah.
But when you see a crutch in full shot, it's not hyper real. It's not over exaggerated. It's just a nice crutch.
Yeah.
It's not over the top, but still very beautiful. Was that a conscious decision to pull back from the classic homoerotica out there in your face crutch?
I think there's a little battle between sort of artistic integrity as well. Like looking at it, like how will this be viewed in 10 years and in 20 years, you know, and will maybe it, try, maybe personally, like I would like to avoid a sort of element of, I don't know, maybe I said it's tacky or a little bit where it could date, or it may not be, the credibility may not be as forthcoming towards it, you know.
I mean, we both decided to it was both like, I guess, an artistic and a business decision. Obviously, we wanted to create a calendar, so... There's a plethora of, you know, porn publications out there and that sort of thing. And we thought, well, instead of going and doing the most obvious thing, let's challenge ourselves to say something sexual in a more, maybe not intelligent way, but I guess that's how we sort of saw it. Like, how can we say something
or
naughty?
Cerebral, at least.
That's something that actually made the viewer fill in the gaps. And sometimes that can be more erotic, a business point of view.
It's very true that the topics that you touch on...
Yeah.
Like water sports, what's the connection, the sexual expression of, is it furries or?
Oh, yeah.
Plushies and furries and all that. Those sorts of perhaps taboo subjects are certainly depicted, but they're not graphic.
Yeah. Well, I guess we sort of tried to do things where we tried to create an image that was first and foremost beautiful, and something that you could sort of just have in the lounge room, and unless you knew about that particular fetish, you didn't get the joke.
And
I guess that's kind of fun for us, because it's such a departure from the way we create images, because I like to be overt generally, but I had to really think about it, and we spent so much time planning every shot, and like so much time, like it's crazy.
And you could also say that like just starting the branding, we don't want to scare people off to start with. It was establishing the bad behavior branding and ourselves as artists and getting us known out there in the community.
So do you think that perhaps you could produce a hardcore edition?
Most definitely.
It's right. Definitely on the agenda, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, we've had friends like...
Well, if you need a model, just give me a call.
I've already asked you, Dean. That'd be great.
There is, you know, we've already had friends asking about it. Like, you know, they sort of see it as inevitable. But I think it's really important to do it the right way, you know.
In fact, in the porn industry, they produce R-rated versions of their titles so that they'll get a greater distribution to literally promote the X-rated version as a sell-through. Yeah. So
that was absolutely, like, certainly with the first calendar that we did, I was saying to Ross, I said, we have to create an image that no matter, you know, any of them could be published in a newspaper, you know, that could be a cover of something so that people can't say, oh, that's too pornographic, because the suggestion is made, but... You know,
so. And that's why you've got so many covers on so many magazines all around the world. Very clever, gents.
I'm talking about a background in marketing.
So. it's clearly working for you. I'm talking to Travis and Ross from the Bad Behaviour Calendars. We'll come back with them soon just to see what they're up to in the year ahead. You're on Hide and Seek. This is Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Travis and Ross, what's coming up ahead this year for you? I heard a little rumour. Has it been officially announced that something in Sydney's...
It's all out just there. Last week.
It's all out there, right.
Yeah, it's out there.
Okay, the official word is that the boys have done the artwork for the Sleazeball 2009 poster for New Mardi Gras. Tell me about that experience.
I don't know, it's certainly a bit of a dream come true for us. We've always wanted to do something for Mardi Gras, and they contacted us actually at the end of last year because they wanted us to work on the campaign for the festival this year, Mardi Gras. And they found out we were from Melbourne and went, oh, the timeline's too short, but we want you for Sleaze. So, but we had a pretty good time on it.
It was great. It was a great opportunity. And we've sort of been working on it for the last, 6-8 months, you know. And then it all came together.
Did they give you the theme? By the way, listener, the theme is Sleazeball Game On and has a real strong sports gear fetish type look and feel. Does that sum it up?
Yeah.
Basically, that's it, yeah.
It's sexy and sweaty and hot. And
So there was an influence from when they saw our calendars, the Bad Behaviour calendars.
Sure.
And one of the images had a theme on it called Game On, and that was sort of an influence for them as well. And that's an idea they kept in the back of their minds, and it evidently just carried through all their meetings, and it's eventuated into what you'll see.
It's really come together well because you've used a collection of various sporting fields from... gridiron through to boxing through to fencing, but Game On is appropriate throughout, and the graphics that they've used for their logo this year are spot on in expressing totally. And complement your images beautifully.
Yeah, and it seems like such a good choice for a theme too, like it's because, you know, so many people have a sports fetish. I mean, you know, so many people go to the gym and, you know, you check each other out in the locker rooms. I just sort of think it's got so much potential.
Not if you go to a certain gym in Richmond that we won't mention.
I'm noting that down.
Now, you also did a superhero poster for a French party. Is that when was that?
One of the images we did for the this year's calendar.
Mm-hmm. 2009 calendar.
Yes. Yeah. We were contacted by a French nightclub, a Paris nightclub, and they wanted to use the image on their flyers. So that was a fantastic little thing to hear from, you know, over in Europe. So
it's funny, like the images that we produced, like through our website and various other things, have gone so far and wide. Like from the first year, like we're on websites in like Brazil and Italy, and like, my God, it's crazy. And so I guess that's how the French thing came about, is people saw the images and said, oh, my God, this is perfect for what we're doing. And it's happened quite a few times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you making any money yet?
No, not really. And that's the thing that we offer.
Not yet.
We have these discussions sometimes that we work so hard putting it together, and we're going like, well, why do we do it? But it's you know, I guess it's an like there's no opportunity for us to create the kind of images we want to do in our commercial life. So this is sort of like a traveling exhibition. You know, it sort of puts the kind of work we want to make in the homes of people or in the minds of people. And takes it outside the gallery space too. Yeah.
I'm surprised you haven't been snapped up by a major German publisher.
well, we're putting a submission
funny
together.
Funny you say that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. No, it's because I say Ross and I were frantically working at the moment. Now we've got a really good, solid body of work. So we're putting a submission into a couple of publishers. I think we've got a pretty good chance. It's very different to what they've already covered. So
probably got a pretty good chance.
Crossing fingers. It'd be nice to see a coffee table book.
So that's the plan for next year, yeah.
Well, amongst your collection of beautiful images are some fantastic shots of some pretty big-name superstars. Adam Elliott, Judith Lucy. Did I see on somebody's website an Annie Lennox picture recently?
Yes.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's sort of it's a good kind
media
of...
Media whores. Shishi LaRue, Marco Blaze.
Yeah,
That was thanks to you.
Oh, well, you know, I try and do my bit for you boys. Have you got any other names coming up soon?
That's a really good question. Well, we know people that we'd like to work with, but it's sort of just about opportunity as well. It would help if we could sort of get out of Australia a bit more because some of the people we want to work with aren't necessarily here. Not that Australia's fabulous, love working here, but it would be nice to sort of, you know, it's hard to get an hour with someone sometimes, you know, like, but yeah, who knows, it could be... Got some people, you know, in mind.
Gentlemen, what's ahead for 2010's calendar? When's it being launched?
We're having a exhibition of images in September, hopefully.
part of Melbourne Leather Pride.
Yes, you were part of Melbourne Leather Pride last year as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it was great.
Excellent.
And then there'll be the launch for the actual calendar around Melbourne Cup in November.
Just in time for calendar season.
We'll have to have a chat about that because I might have someone in town that could help you launch that.
Oh my god! Okay. I like the sound of that.
What's the look and feel? Because last year's one, 2009, was a strong dark fetish sort of feel and a bit edgy, a bit edgier than the previous one.
Yeah.
Where are we headed for 2010?
I think. We did want to push it a little bit further. We're just trying to show a little bit more flesh as well. Just maybe raunch it up a little bit as well.
Although it does have a bit of a theatrical side for some reason. We've sort of gone... It's very kind of a little bit more theatrical than the last one, but there's a lot more flesh in this one. So we've had some access to some great models this year.
Well, that brings me to the next question. Mm. Firstly, where do you find these men? Secondly... What's the casting couch procedure? and thirdly, how can I help?
We've got boring answers to all three of those questions.
most of the people, they're all local Melbourne boys, people we meet, people that we know out in the scene.
Gay, straight?
Whoever will work for us.
Okay. Yeah. Whoever doesn't take their clothes off for you.
Yeah. Exactly.
I like that.
Often people that we just meet in daily life too that, you know, have a magnetic quality and because it's not always about being buff, it's not, always, you know, or young or any of those things. It's sort of just about having a quality that's, you know, just attracts us, I suppose. And we're very, very picky about models, like if we both have to like them. And as far as the casting process goes, like it's...
A lot of the time we have our eye on people, like for... a long time. Like I've had my eye on some people for a couple of years.
And not let on?
And then I think, okay, I think you're going somewhere. I think...
They've ripened.
Yeah. You've ripened. You're now ready. Yeah. And then we approach them and then we say, you know, hey...
Get your gear off and sniff
it. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, and we think you're ready. Yeah.
And we're still shocked at how people just sort of say yes, you know, because we always go rejection. We expect rejection.
But I think when you get a body of work together that is as beautiful as what you guys have produced and you present that to someone... They must be flattered to be asked.
Yeah,
they have to be.
It does help now that we've got a couple of calendars under our belt. I mean, the first one was really tough to do because we were working... the first models that we worked with were people we'd worked on DNA with and that sort of thing. But they'd done fashion stuff. But suddenly we were asking them to go up to someone who's never done it before and say, hey, we're going to just tie you up and take a photo. That they kind of expected hell and it ended up being this really amazing experience and now they're into it, you know.
So it's
interesting.
Gentlemen, we'll keep an eye on your website, badbehaviourpublishing.com. for the release dates and the exhibition dates. Thank you very much for joining us, Travis De Jong and Ross Brownston from Bad Behaviour Publishing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been a pleasure having you on Hide and Seek. Good luck with the 2010's calendar and good luck with your international success.
Thank you.
This
Thank
is Hide and Seek on Joy, 94.9.
And enjoy the ride.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.